Las Culturistas is brought to you by the Forever Dog Podcast Network.
Find us and other great podcasts at www.foreverdogpodcasts.com.
And if you're loving what you're hearing, subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts.
And while you're there, please write us a nice review and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you all!
Thank you all!
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
And guess who has his own mic now?
Wow.
Hot engineer Will.
Can you talk to everybody?
Hi. Wow. I said this show is becoming a full experience.
You were going to say this show becomes more and more Howard Stern by the episode.
And shout out to Howard.
We love
who
Howard.
Who listens? No. I mean, but I will say shout out to
Nick.
I was just on Howard Stern wrap-up show, and I want to say what's up to those folks. I had so much fun.
Oh, and I just got dinner with Mateo Lane, previous guest of the wrap-up show.
Yes. Oh, his episodes are fabulous.
And he was singing everybody's praises over there at Stern.
They're a great group.
He loves you guys over there. We love you.
They're an army of great folks.
Yes.
And I will say I'm happy that we talked about that because it put me in a good place for a second.
What do you mean? What are you
talking
about?
Well, you know, Bowen, I should be flying high.
You should be flying high because
I should be flying high as the winner of Culture War.
I was going to say.
But I'm not. I'm not flying high. I'm feeling really...
What's going on?
I can't believe we lost the real war, which is Taylor Swift. She beat us. She put out an album that is
still out.
No, the jury's not out, bitch. And we have been texting about how it is a done deal, and this album is a full.
It's not her best. It's not her best.
It doesn't matter if it's her. If it's not her best, it's still very good.
Listen, I read an interview today.
I'm ashamed.
I read an interview today with because basically she's pulling a Beyonce. She's not doing any interviews for this album cycle. But
God bless.
Her go-to music video director is Joseph Kahn.
Yes, Joseph Kahn.
This crazy-looking Korean...
Babadookish
man, who is a visionary, whatever. But he's sort of been her mouthpiece this whole time. And I will say, I, came after her at Culture War for being, a pseudo-white supremacist.
You did. You said, I don't think so, honey. ACLU.
Enemy, Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
I think just her legal team is obviously very misguided, but... Joseph Kahn seemed to leave me with the impression that she is not she's not the enemy. Well, she's an enemy.
I am bopping and swooping and stomping and twerking
it's
on
a good
the streets
album.
To this
we
one.
We saw her at the SNL after party.
Yes, we did.
That was crazy. Anyway.
Wild. Now, look.
We have another star in our midst. Oh, my God. And
what?
Look at him.
What?
Go.
Okay, you guys were at the SNL after party, but somehow only Dave Mazzoni got all up in that.
Because there's
what
a
the
long
fuck
story.
Was going on
there's
there?
A long story.
Are
there
you boys not resourceful? Story. I thought I trained you better than this.
I
fucking choreographers getting in your way.
No.
Don't
you call
Dave
don't you
a
call
choreographer.
Him that. He is so much more than mostly a choreographer. No, listen. I would have felt like a sham if I had gone up there and took a picture with her. I would have felt like a sham.
It would have
because
felt...
I've talked so much shit, and so has Bo.
And so have I, but I came up with the perfect thing to vote to have said to her.
What would you have said, Bowen?
I would have been like, hi, are you the girl from the UPS trucks? And we both would have laughed. We both would have laughed. She would have laughed.
No.
She would have found it funny.
Oh, my
here
God.
Here is why. I'm going to assert why Dave Mazzoni was able to go up to Taylor Swift and the two of you were not.
Confidence in looks?
There's that. I'm going to say that you guys fundamentally would approach that situation as colleagues and would be annoyed that she did not recognize your collegial status, and Dave Mazzoni is able, because of looks and confidence, to simply be a fan.
Okay, here's what happened.
There's some backstory to it, though.
So Matt and Dave met us at the after party. I was at the taping, and I brushed shoulders with her, and we made eye contact in these narrow halls of 8H. And
oh, my God.
I felt this. No. I'm just saying this. Stop. Matt's being an asshole.
King of my heart.
I felt this look from her. I was like, she knows I've talked shit about her. She knows. But she absolutely doesn't.
That's wonderful. That is so wonderful. I know that feeling so well. Why didn't somebody leverage Todrick Hall? Todrick Hall was right there.
In fact, that's what happened.
He was the whole reason why there was a picture even taken. So apparently. And
God, I love Todrick Hall.
I will spill tea now.
Yes.
Here we go.
Tea will be spilled.
Here we go.
So we were at the SNL after party. Taylor Swift famously performed as the musical guest. Todrick was there because Todrick, I guess, and Taylor are real IRL friends.
Yes.
And Todrick...
What are those phone messages I need to understand?
Who knows? It's him gushing. All right, so Todrick was kind of being like, her keeper, in a sense. Like, he was, like, three steps behind her the whole time, like, making sure she didn't spend too much time with one person. Like, you could tell, kind of tell, if she wanted to move on, she'd kind of throw a look to Todrick, and she'd be swept away. So, Todrick, I guess, is old friends with Ariel, Dave's boyfriend. So, they were talking to Todrick almost immediately when we got there, and I was like, how the fuck do they know Todrick Hall?
So that was their entry point, and so then they kind of got swooped in, and they were sort of in this queue.
So looks, confidence, ability to maintain a relationship.
Yes, there absolutely. At least Ariel.
Those are the big three. She did. Taylor did set her martini down on our table, though, when she was taking the picture.
And we looked at it. It was like a vodka martini with like a lemon twist.
And we were like, that's Taylor Swift's drink.
And I will say this. There's one other thing. Dave Missoni, when he met Taylor Swift, promoted our show at UCB East game show to her, described it, and said the words, "You should come."
He's a goddamn professional.
He's a goddamn professional.
So much respect. Okay. The thing is...
Wait, hold on. We don't even know who this is.
We have to introduce you just as a formality.
We don't even know who this is.
As a formality, let's introduce the guest. Matt, let's go through the credits, bitch.
Let's just the credits. So, listen, you can hear him back. He has wrestled back the hosting duties from Louis Vertel. I can't imagine he gave it away easily again. Got a little comfortable. So of Pop Rocket.
Our drag mother, yes.
Really. This is one of the best podcasts. I mean, Bone and I were on it when we were in LA. We had such a blast.
True intellectuals on that.
Seriously
show.
Amazing. We felt like the true little dumb pieces of corn kernels that we are.
I was an idiot, yeah.
Yeah, you were. We talked about such emotionally and intellectually stimulating topics as the finale of Girls.
Which was stimulating.
No, it was very stimulating. I didn't know it could be that stimulating, but let me tell you.
At least to nipples.
Yes. So, and obviously, the host of the amazing show on True TV, talk show, The Game Show. Making its return. This is such a fun show, you guys.
So
and listen to me right now. If you... queers thought that the first time Tiffany Haddish told that story
about the swamp tour. I saw it live on the first episode of Talk Show The Game Show, and I lost my mind. I was like, who is this person?
Yeah.
Tiffany what?
Haddish, bitch!
And then she was on Girls Trip.
And Girls Trip. Just the host of SNL. Wow. Truly a small world.
Small world. It all goes back to Tiffany.
A writer for The Mindy Project, and really just cultural icon in our eyes. His name?
Guy Branum.
Good to be here. Look, now, I need to go back
reassume.
To my point,
yeah.
Which is, okay, yeah. So as somebody who has lived in LA for quite some time, mm-hmm. and has had some downtimes in his career, like the specter of being pet gay to famous women has been presented. And there are just those moments. I spent one evening essentially being the pet gay to Rumor Willis as she was courting
thank God,
Zac Efron.
Oh my God!
And it was
I was
surprised I have not told you guys this story before because I love this story too much.
We need to know.
It essentially just comes down to he had gained like 30 pounds of muscle to do that movie where like Dear John or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one where he was coming back from the war. He was hot as fuck in that.
I did not realize.
Lucky one.
I like was around him for like 2 hours before I realized it was Zac Efron, and it was he started freestyle rapping.
No.
He was like I can freestyle rap about anything. Give me a topic. And Rumor said Scooby-Doo. And then he freestyle rapped for 5 minutes and never mentioned anything remotely related to Scooby-Doo.
Oh.
And like at that point, I was like, because I was shit-faced.
Yeah.
And I was like, this might be Zac Efron. And then we were back at her place. And she like did the thing of like giving me the $100 bill to tip the driver and stuff like that, which were very much the like, you are my pet gay sort of things. And then like, Zac Efron turned to me and was like, where do we make drinks? And I was like,
oh,
I don't know. Like, I'm not a concierge here.
Jesus.
No, but it was also like, it was reasonable for him to expect that I was failing. The thing is I went in and I was like, I'm going to figure out if this is Zac Efron or not. So then I asked him, where do you live? And he dodged. And then I said, because I'm not unfamiliar with Zac Efron's Wikipedia page, I said, are you half Jewish? And he said, well, it's my dad's dad, so I'm like a third Jewish.
Oh my God.
And I was like, that is someone who learned fractions on a soundstage.
Yeah.
And that
on a studio lot, honey. he learned his school in Orlando, Florida.
Here's the thing. He did a Vogue 73 questions, and it was mask drag. It was like,
I saw that.
Like, the night that I was with him, he wanted to prove to you that he could take beer bottle tops off so hard that he just kept opening beer bottles when no one needed the beers.
Oh, my God.
It's a constant need, exactly what you said, to prove masculinity. He speaks in that fake low voice.
Yes. Has anyone done a good 73 questions other than Sarah Jessica Parker?
Yes. Emma Stone did a good one.
Emma Stone did a really good one. Nicole Kidman was very Nicole Kidman,
and I loved it.
I loved Reese Witherspoon's.
It being very Nicole Kidman is true. I won't say that makes it good.
to me, as long as it's authentic, it is good.
She ends up on her ranch and by her stables.
I hate when she pretends she's super Australian. Like, I'm tired of it.
It definitely is on an Australian ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Speaking of, the Taylor Swift one was very like...
What advice would you give to a new singer?
Get a good lawyer. Get a good lawyer.
That'll sue the AAC. That'll sue a blog. Whatever. I almost said the ACLU.
Honestly, whenever you see little peaks of her in that old Taylor, whenever you see little peaks of like what we know as Taylor now, which is like honestly, I guess more of a real person in that she's like kind of a bitch.
I want that.
I kind of love that she said get a good lawyer, because you know what? That was her real answer.
But you guys cut your teeth on the faux virginity of people who are pretending to be super nice, and now you are experiencing like business women. Which do you prefer?
Business women.
Now business women.
Yes.
Yeah, because now I know too much.
So two very talented comics in LA, Tess Barker and Barbara Gray, mm-hmm. have a podcast that is just about analyzing Britney Spears' Instagram. And
Dave Mazzoni just turned to sand.
Yeah.
My core issue with Britney Spears is like, I always want to know that it's a bitch who can take care of herself.
Yeah.
And like, she legally can't take care of herself.
Right.
I know. I mean, yeah. That's the thing, is it's like, now that we have them literally putting themselves on Facebook Live for 72 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, sure. Like, show us who you really fucking are.
Yeah.
I think the media is too sensitive now for these people to keep up these ruses. I think that it's convenient that Taylor Swift got called out when she did, because literally, I think in the last 2 or 3 years, you were able to keep up a veneer, whereas now you're not. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think she could continue... She very clearly couldn't continue the princess thing.
Yeah.
And because she was like a walking, breathing Disney princess. That was the whole brand. But that obviously couldn't continue and wasn't real. So now
I hate our fictions of young womanhood that are meant to soothe dads.
Right. Which was her whole thing.
There, I think it was on like The Verge or something. It was this gigantic essay. The title of it was just A Unified Theory on Taylor Swift, which was just reconciling both this like sweet, affable, likable side to her that was also like paired with this like cold, almost fascistic business person.
Yeah, right.
And like the parts that were fascinating were obviously the parts about her being this very cunning business
person. What's real?
She has this quote where she was, no. This is the first profile they ever did on her in Rolling Stone. Was she was baking cookies for her fans because they were over at the house listening. Do you know the story?
No.
She was baking cookies for her fans who were over at the house listening to cuts from her new album. And she pulls out this tray of gorgeous looking cookies. And then she's so excited. She's about to go to the fridge to get the milk. She opens the fridge. There's no milk, but there is a bottle of Half and Half. And she goes, oh, wow. Mom did that. That wasn't me. Mom bought that. And it was supposed to convey this thing of like, she like, just as soon as the veneer cracks on like this perfect curated thing, it's like, it's like a fucking like I don't watch Westworld, but it's like a no. It's like a Get Out thing. I just saw Get Out. You need to see Get Out.
I need to see Get Out.
It's like the Flash is being like sort of like the Flash bulb is sort of going in her eye, and she's like, oh, something. The Matrix is off. You know, yeah. It was incredible. It's incredible.
But here's the thing of however much we whine about being gay guys, like never having to have the full obligation of womanhood and like satisfying someone's expectations of you. There's this British art historian who has the line, men act, women appear.
Mm.
And it is just so devastating to sort of like understand what it is to try to be Taylor Swift when you have this obligation of appearing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Trust me. I don't think I envy her. I think I envy like, you know, obviously how much money she has, the fact that she can do whatever she wants, but also she can't. So now I'm listening to the new album, and it's got these, you know, casual references to, like, we met up in a dive bar in the East Village. And I'm like, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. Because I went, we went to this after party the other night, and it was like, she couldn't have been more, like, protected there.
She
but
was
there
mobbed.
Was still groups of people out. We were leaving the bar, and there was groups of people with reputation signs. I was like, oh, shit, this never stops for
yeah.
you. That rumor that she was carried out in a fucking trunk.
In a box.
I was like,
yeah.
in a box that she got carried out of her apartment in a box?
Yeah.
There was no way that was true. But the fact that we live in a world where people were like entertaining that as real, like, well, she wanted to skip the fans, so she got carried out in a fucking box. That's her life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I am very much of the opinion that you never become that famous without inviting it upon yourself.
No, yeah.
Like, she could be Carly Rae Jepsen if she wanted to be, mm-hmm. but she didn't. She wanted to be the Princess of America, and this is what you get.
Yep. Mm. She wanted to be the most powerful person in the world, and she is. And that, honestly, that's what's crazy, but I will say, that mixed with, okay, I'm going to be more of my real self, is interesting to me because... Have you listened to the new album at all?
No.
Okay. So she's singing about getting fucked for the first time.
Oh.
She's singing about, she's cursing for the first time. And she's being, like, knowingly petty and bitchy for the first time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
it was always like, fuck you, I'm the best.
Yeah.
And it's because I'm righteous. And I know that at the end of the day, I'm right. Like, but now it's like, oh, I fucked up because these are the mistakes I make. And it's a pattern. And I know that. But like,
I think she's still on the defensive for most of the album.
Definitely on a lot of it. Like, she still is who she is. But there's shades of gray now.
Pretending to be dark seems like it would be annoying. I have to listen. I do love waiting for you guys. You have no idea. But on the podcast Lady to Lady, I did several years before Lemonade call The Coming of Lemonade. I referred to it as the post-divorce album because I under and overestimated Beyonce.
Yes, yes, yes. yes
but
yes,
like
yes.
having that actually come was just so like, oh God, you learned a lesson. You like, you hear, this is full of lessons that are on top of the astounding pop skills that you had before that.
Yes.
But I also want to say my favorite subgenre of songs mm-hmm. is songs where women talk about the female orgasm or just sort of the idea of like, nobody does it better. Here you come again. But like, Son of a Preacher Man that are that sort of like deep and special relation.
Is Here You Come Again about having an orgasm?
You can
extrapolate.
No,
to the
it's about you're something up my mind and filling up my senses. It's like,
oh, wow.
She's trying to get away from him.
Talking about the Dolly Parton song,
yes,
Children.
I've had two drinks
here
now.
Here you come again.
Yeah. But it's like, but it's talking flat. About how his body is able to do things to her that nobody else's can.
Oh, wow.
And so she can't
filling
get away.
Filling up my senses.
Filling
yes.
up.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
is
yeah.
there a better description of an orgasm than filling up my senses?
No, there isn't.
Like,
it's a good lyrical term.
And that she's an amazing lyricist, that Dolly Parton.
That Dolly.
She did not write Here You Come Again.
What, oh, you're what? Right. You know what? That was one of the few she didn't write.
One of the great stigmas that like rests upon me, like why I am always distanced from hipster culture is that like I like the Dolly Parton song that she didn't write.
No, you know what, though?
It was also that really discredits your hipster cred, guy.
No, I just mean it is, look, it is part of an enormous castle of
yeah.
poppy sensibilities like
yes.
that make me somebody
sure.
who doesn't care about your singer-songwriter status.
Yes, yes,
I
yes.
want a Swedish computer to write all of your songs
yeah,
for
because
you.
That was her quote-unquote crossover song. That was her pop song.
Here You Come Again?
Yes, that was the first song
that
she
was.
That was her,
early,
like, 1989.
Early days,
it was,
Dolly.
But she, too, had to cross over from country music
yes.
because she was country.
She
like,
was Grand Ole Opry.
She was Grand Ole Opry. Come on.
Come on.
And she had to, before she got to 9 to 5 and, like, being played on mainstream
yes,
radio
yes, yes.
and, like, being in films with Jane Fonda, you know, she was country.
Ugh.
And she needed... And that song came at a time where she was trying to cross over to new fans. It
God,
was.
She's still sharp as a tack. I love her.
In many ways, the original Taylor Swift, because, you know, they say Dolly Parton is hiding quite a bit.
Of course.
Oh, and you guys, like, you heard Rosie talking about Whitney, didn't you?
Oh,
yeah.
Was this
on
today
Watch
that
What
came
Happens
out?
Live?
But
yes.
Everyone knew. But what did Rosie specifically say that was revelatory?
I hate saying everyone knew. You of all people, Bowen Yang, should
they
understand the persistent power of the closet.
Okay, okay, okay. But the thing is, I read this.
Do you want me to be truly? Do you want me to truly read now?
Yeah.
Truly read.
How many times did you have to come out?
Go on.
Twice.
I know, I'm just being an asshole. I love what I have learned from you guys about this show. I feel like I could steal your mom's identity. Like, I
my
just,
mother?
Yes. What do I know about Bowen's mom? That she would have been the Surgeon General of China if she had stayed. That is all. But Katrina Clarides, like,
yeah,
I mean.
She's been revealed.
I can trace her family back to Greece.
That's crazy. I can't.
I feel like I've picked up the same. This is the same sort of textured story of guys' sort of upbringing too, but it's just I have no entry point into that. I can't just walk up to Sacramento, like walk into your mom's house in Sacramento and be like, hello, I know so much about you.
No one's allowed to walk into my mother's home, okay?
Bowen, you're insane.
Whatever. Oh my God, speaking of, I was one of the many fags that texted you right after I saw Lady Bird. I said, you have to go see it.
Did you?
No, it meant so much to me that you did that. That movie, like, hit me hard.
Oh, I didn't see it yet. I'm always last.
Well, it was fascinating because, like, nobody ever talked about Sacramento ever, and then Other People comes out, which is like very set in Sacramento, and then Lady Bird, which is even more Sacramento, and that Greta Gerwig's reading of Sacramento is so deeply rooted in Joan Didion is like the smartest thing ever,
right.
The sort of like withholding class conscious. Practical mother that it just sort of really hit me hard, and I immediately called my mom and started a fight with her. I just immediately called
my mom
was like, "We're gonna fight for a while."
But it was comforting in a way.
No, it was wonderful. That movie is so funny. It's so good. Doesn't it make you a little bit mad that Greta Gerwig is able to
a little bit?
Yeah,
a little
do everything.
Bit.
Yeah, and it's I did a movie with Greta.
Wait, was this?
No Strings Attached.
No Strings Attached.
That's the
was
only
in
movie
it.
I've done.
Wait, I love your stories about that movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, can we get into that? We'll talk about it later. Greta.
She played one of Natalie Portman's friends.
Yes.
Me and Mindy Kaling. It was the three of us.
Right.
That cast is fucking insane. The least interesting person in that cast is the male lead.
Yes.
What? I mean, what?
No, he's terrible. He's a horrible person.
Yeah.
I hated working for him.
Wow.
The lowest point in my professional career was going from a situation where, after that movie, Ashton Kutcher was actively frightened of me. He was actively aware that a conversation with me, and I never tried to make it happen. I was just trying to be as nice to the famous person as I could.
Right.
And I couldn't help but accidentally point out ridiculously stupid things that he had said. And we went from that to me having to work for his fucking production company for almost a year.
I didn't know he had to work for him.
It was so terrible because then he got to come. Like, when he's paying my rent, he gets to be big dog, you know?
Yeah. Wait, that makes me sad. That makes me feel like Mila Kunis isn't cool.
No, I think she's wonderful. Like, Demi Moore.
She seems wonderful.
You really want to believe it. I mean, I love a good I Learned English from the Price is Right story.
Yes.
Whether it's
Mila
Kunis or Cristela Alonso, I just fucking love it.
We need that. Honestly, you know what made me think that Mila was actually a fucking gem? Well, the fact that you can feel her and everything she does.
Yes.
Like, she seems like she's the kind of actress who never plays far from herself because she probably can't. But also, like, that's fine because we love.
We got Jupiter Ascending Queens here. Are there any Jupiter Ascending Queens here?
We didn't see it.
Jupiter Ascending is so good.
Is it good?
No. it is the most, like, it is.
We gotta smoke and watch that.
It is profoundly about transness. Like, if I had watched it when I was, like, 11 or 12 years old, I would have fucking plotzed and given my life to it.
Wachowski sisters.
It's not good.
But I mean, Eddie Redmayne looks like the most beautiful woman in the world.
But a fucking original IP. I give my life for an original IP.
Same these days. Yeah. Still gagged for, like, when Star Wars comes out and everything, but gagged. Yeah. But here's what I was saying about Mila. In the end credits of Bad Moms, which I just watched again the other day, which we saw, and were we with Sudi?
We saw with Sudi.
And we were gagged for Bad Moms. We love Bad Moms. And at the end, when they're all talking with their moms, that made me really feel very close to all of them. And
yes.
I already have been a Christina Applegate stan since 7 years old.
I have long maintained that a brunette Christina Applegate provides you with all of your Jennifer Aniston needs at half the cost.
My God, that's rule of culture number three. A brunette, Christina Applegate, provides you with all the Jennifer Aniston needs at half the cost.
I saw Bad Moms like across the way on an airplane. I was like, what is that? And I have not let myself watch it because I love a mass market comedy so much, mm-hmm, yeah. But I was not aware of it when it came out, and it makes me fear that it is going to be like
not a
simulation of a good broad comedy.
I will tell you this, it's not as funny as Bridesmaids, but literally nothing is, and it's actually funny.
It's right? actually funny. And
or did you not like it?
I liked it.
No, we all liked
it. We all liked it. I have to point out this weird thing I have with Bad Moms. It's not a thing at all, but it was just something that like was a blip on my radar.
I haven't heard this.
Like all you watch the credits, the opening sort of packages, like three different Chinese production companies, and like I'm like, "Oh, is this what Hollywood might be in like a decade or so?" Is like a bunch of like Chinese, specifically Chinese production companies.
Wait, okay. What?
Bankrolling all these movies. All right,
but also let me tell you.
Like, not a bad thing.
Look, having one's ear to the ground in Los Angeles, there once was a time when I would say, like, and having this be marketable in China or India,
yes.
Like, you would say that and they would be like, no, that doesn't matter, that doesn't matter. Oh, shit's a changing.
Now it does.
Shit's a changing. And it is kind of interesting and exciting.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
That I didn't realize that it was like
yeah,
Chinese production companies that made that movie.
And yeah, and I sort of framed that as like a hang up. It's not a hang up at all. I'm just saying like this is a thing I'm noticing and it starts with
you know
Bad
what?
Moms. For
I did notice that I didn't recognize the production companies.
There's another movie that I saw. I think it might have been Baby Driver that also had all these Chinese credits.
No,
it was Edge of 17. We have to talk about Hailee Steinfeld.
No, No.
We're saving that for the show. Oh no, but by
we're
going to
talk about it right now.
Do you read Chinese?
I can't read the characters. I can read like maybe 5% of the characters, and they're all the simple.
Because that's a thing where like, there's no acquiring skills. You just have to learn the characters individually, right?
Yep. And then just know their meanings paired with other characters. It's truly an insane language. Like I started to pick up Korean recently and I was literally just
really?
Like
casual
and I got angry.
I just picked up Korean.
No, I
started
I
to pick,
pick
up Korean.
I just started to like learn like the alphabet and I was like, oh, the fact that there's a phonetic alphabet is so unfair. I'm like, I was mad. I was like, oh, like my upbringing learning this other language, like my quote unquote mother tongue or whatever is like so much harder than the Korean kids in Denver, and they're everywhere in Denver, who just like grew up speaking Korean and just like being able to read it so easily. And I was like, why? Like, why is that? Anyway, the fact is they have an alphabet. But Edge of 17, all these huge Chinese.
Yeah. So Bowen referenced Edge of 17 recently as like one of those new coming age movies that's like actually good that even the critics pointed to and they said, hey, this is one to see. And I was interested because Hailee Steinfeld is someone I've always been like mildly interested in after she got
Grit.
An Oscar nomination
she
for
True
Grit?
Yes.
She Oscar nomination for that and you know in Pitch Perfect and then she released interesting that
masturbation
very
song.
Much about masturbation song.
Oh.
Love myself.
I gotta love myself. No, I don't need anybody else. Hey.
We recently learned she's a Republican, right?
Oh, that's what
How did you know
How
this?
Did you know?
What
did,
are your
did
Joel
sources?
Tell you?
I forget. Louis Vertel or one of you on I Am?
No. It must have been Louis then.
It must have been Louis.
Joel told us that we won't say how he knows, but confirmed that she voted for Trump.
Calabasas. Like the
answer.
The answer is just the West Valley. God. It is a different and magical place.
And apparently she talked openly about it on the set of Pitch Perfect 3.
About how she was voting for Trump.
And she's like barely Filipino. Also fucking Jewish, right? Like she's a Jew of color, technically.
Right.
Filipino, like, Jewish, and a Trump. You know what, guy? It was me. It was me that said that. Oh my God. That's how wasted I am of like up here at all times. I was the one that said that to you. I was like, God, we have horrible news.
Thank you for apprising me of that, Matt. I still have not seen Edge of 17 because there is a way that I will get like frightened of these things that could be something I enjoy greatly or just like
I'm
super disappointing.
Way. I'm the same way. Whenever there's like a big, I'm like that with Get Out. I'm like that with Lady Bird right now. Whenever there's like a big thing that everyone's talking about, I'm like, let me take a second and I will see it. I still haven't. No, I won't even say that.
What? Come on. Get come out. On.
I still haven't seen other people because I know I'm going to enjoy it so much. And I know it's going to affect me so deeply that I'll be out for in a week and
but
a half.
But it's also one of the other fascinating things about it.
My friends are in
it. Is just realizing how, like, that telling gay male stories is about silence in such significant ways that figuring out how to tell them is interesting. Brian Lauder in Slate magazine, or Slate, once said that he questioned whether it was possible to tell, like, emotionally relevant gay male stories without some element of fantasy to them. And I love that a great deal. Because, like, other people is so... Okay, I have to tell you. In Other People, there is a moment where Jesse What's-His-Name sits behind Molly Shannon while she puts on makeup, and he talks to her while she is getting ready to go to this party that they're having at their house. And it was like a thing from my life that I had never seen represented in media.
Yeah.
That was like the, like, I hate, I have a passionate hatred of fucking representations of boys and their dogs or dads throwing footballs with their son. Fuck you and your heteronormative, like normality. But seeing this equivalent of that from my life, I was just like wrecked.
Wow, even saying that, I can like smell the hairspray.
Yes, yes. The most glamorous woman in the world is
Mom.
Katrina Clarides.
She is. She is.
And you, and yeah, well, and specifically hairspray for you just because of what your mom did or does.
Yeah, I mean, we literally had a salon, a little salon.
Did
in
she
our
do
house.
Hair?
Yeah, she's a hairdresser. We had a, it was like a gay boy's dream. We had like a little salon in our house where she would have clients and she'd work out of the house a couple days a week, and then she works in the shop as well, like 1 or 2 days a week. And I would just have that room to do my hair in the morning. Have you seen Call Me By Your Name yet? Or have you, like,
that's
I
what I was going to bring up.
I
have
not.
Yeah.
Have you read it?
No.
I'm reading it now, and I gotta say, I'm not fully on board yet with just the pacing of it, because I'm just like, it's just tense staring. There, nothing has happened yet. Apparently, there's a peach scene that I'm supposed to be waiting for.
Yeah, there sure is.
No, but I mean, that's the horrible thing about our stories, is that there is so much fear involved, that there's so much, like, pausing and everything.
It's all of it is just waiting. That's part of, like, the gay narrative is just, like, some repression of a moment.
Sorry. I was trying to remember the thing that I wanted to say, and it was this, that, like, when they made a movie version of The Handmaid's Tale, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. And when they made the TV version, it's great.
Yeah.
The difference is VO. The difference is being inside of her head and realizing she's still a person like you. And I feel like with a novel, when you're dealing with long, tense looks...
Yep.
You're able to sort of like fill it up Henry James style what's going on inside. But like when it's a fucking movie, like so frequently, look, my opinions on looking are very well recorded. Mm-hmm. But I don't want this boring gay story where nothing happens and people are scared all the time.
No, I don't need realism.
Yes.
We live it every fucking day. We're tired of it.
So that's what it is. It's just every gay narrative needs some element of fantasy. Because...
Well, give us some bombast. You know, I mean, come on. It's rule number 16 of culture. Give us some bombast. Come on.
Guy, let's finally get to the question.
No, I feel like it's too late for that. I feel like we need to take a break because we literally at the moment where we need to take a break.
Fine,
and then
fine.
When we get back, bitch.
Okay.
That is when we have to ask Guy Branum pinnacle question of this podcast, but because we've been having too much goddamn fun, we're not going to get there.
And
in this
he has a question for us.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
He's going to ask us something, but before we get to our break, let's read a 5-star review. We're going to do this. We're going to try something out, something a little bit new. These are some 5-star reviews from our Apple Podcasts page. Guys, please leave us a 5-star review.
In the hopes that you will leave us a 5-star review, because you guys, we want to be seen out there in the world. You know, get us out there.
Help us get visible, honey. This is a review submitted by Kaw with many exclamation points.
Love that.
The title of this review is Barbar. It's a reference to our Kristen Bartlett episode.
Love you, Kristen.
5 stars. This podcast regularly makes me laugh out loud. For a dead inside, black-souled monster like me, that's saying quite a bit. Kaw. Well, thank you, Kaw, and thank you for submitting your review like a true Barbar bitch. Now, we love you so much. Let's cut to our break. We'll be right back with Guy Branum.
Yes.
And we're back with Guy.
Sure now, are. And before we took the break, we did tease that we would ask this question.
Let's ask the question. You ask it.
So, Guy Branum, this is the question that we ask every guest that appears upon Las Culturistas.
I'm entirely unfamiliar with
that
it.
That happens upon
I'm
Las Culturistas.
I'm not prepared for it in any way.
Well, we'd like to ask you, what is the culture that, you know, it's the culture that when you opened the door one day, there it was. You know, it was a little package of culture, and it said, you picked it up and shook it from ear to ear, and you said, whatever's inside here, this is going to be what sets me on a journey. And that journey is culture. That journey is your individual culture.
This is not your standard phrasing. No. Your standard phrasing is what made you realize culture is for you.
Yes.
And after having like parsed this question significantly to myself and trying to figure out what, like, where is the starting point? When do we say, like, mm-hmm. I jumped off the rails of conventional humanity? Mm. The answer that I had very much prepped that, like, what made me realize culture was for me was Deborah Jean Branham of Yuba City, California. But since you have said what culture, I suppose I have to give you another answer.
No. You Deborah. Give us whatever answer you want, honey. I will not be responsible for you listening back to this and saying, wow, I didn't represent myself culturally in the way that I would like.
Because the thing is that like so many people do come here with like a concrete text. And when I was thinking about it, I thought a lot about like Greek mythology. I thought about a lot. I thought
Beautiful.
About The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But I also very significantly thought about like, it used to be before cable mm-hmm. that old movies were shown on UHF stations in the summertime. Mm-hmm. Do you know anything about that? None of those words mean anything to you.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know what a UHF. What is...
Okay, so there were stations that were your networks, uh-huh. your NBC, your ABC, your CBS.
Yes.
This is before Fox, mm-hmm. and then you would have like three other channels that were just like whatever the fuck they could put together. Uh-huh. Like it was where you watched your cartoons after school, and then during the summertime when there was not like network stuff being shown. The ones in Sacramento would show old movies, but because
Such
it was
as,
Sacramento,
okay.
they couldn't afford All About Eve. Like they couldn't afford the Philadelphia Story. And so the two I will particularly say are Arsenic and Old Lace.
Okay.
And Bell Book and Candle.
I will say Arsenic and Old Lace does not hold up.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
What is Arsenic and Old Lace
about?
It's a
Cary Grant. It's a Cary Grant movie.
Who
was
the woman?
You're going to love the premise. Nobody.
Oh no.
This guy lives in Brooklyn and he goes to take his new bride to meet his two aunts. And his two aunts are serial murderers. They are putting poison. They get older bachelors. And who they think are sad, and then they like believe that they are humanely euthanizing them, and then they have his brother, who believes he is Teddy Roosevelt, bury them in the basement.
It's kind of like Get Out, though.
Yes, it is.
Wow, it's all that's sort of connecting back to Get Out. That's fun.
No, I was actually thinking about it today because like the original play was read as sort of like a commentary on the tension between America wanting to be so libertine and like our dark history, and I was sort of like,
interesting.
What is a racialized Arsenic and Old Lace?
That was fascinating.
Let's step forward. Let's talk about Bell Book and Candle, okay?
I'm not familiar.
What is Bell Book and Candle?
Okay, so it's mid-1950s. Kim Novak is a sassy witch who lives in the West Village.
Oh,
all right?
I'm on board.
Jimmy Stewart lives in her building, and she finds out that he is engaged to the girl who was her bully at Vassar or Radcliffe. Like, it's, we're talking about
her college bully
from a Seven Sister school, because let us remember, most Ivy League schools did not let women in until the
80s. Yes. Oh,
so she casts a spell making him fall in love with her. It's a 1950s movie, so in the end she does realize that being in love is more important than being a witch, and it all falls apart and is terrible. But guys, the like witch culture is all sort of like like beatnik, West Village, underground bar. Like, it's the coolest fucking thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, I need that.
And Kim Novak is just like never not being glorious and wearing capri pants. Like, I love it.
I love that.
She saunters like a cat every fucking moment. Mm. Elsa Lanchester and Hermione Gingold, who are like.
Hermione Gingold?
Yes. Like, it is just classic biddies. And, like, as a child on like a sweaty, sweaty, like Sacramento Valley, like, evening in the summertime, was just like, this is like raw glamour. Like, to me,
my tribe.
To me, like, witchcraft and French braiding felt like things that were just out of reach that all women understood, you know?
Yeah. So have you followed the like pop culture witches ever since? Are you a Stevie Nicks fan?
Yes. I love pop culture witches. I hate when witches go away from us. I love when witches return to us. Yes.
I feel that witches are very in.
Witches are returning. We had a long vampire period that I had no taste for.
No, but also even True Blood, they had witches.
I think witches have been a perennial sort of, have had this perennial appeal for just since time immemorial. I feel like witches have always been with us, wouldn't you say?
I
don't think they ever went away.
Bowen Yang. Like, they ebb and flow along with everything else,
yeah,
okay?
I think you're right.
Female agency has its moments in pop culture, and then they go away. Practical Magic was a beautiful moment, but you point me to good witches of the early 2000s.
I will...
Sabrina?
Sabrina? I don't know if that counts.
It was from the 90s, wasn't it?
I guess you're
right. Can I tell you guys a spoiler from Talk Show the Game Show?
Sure.
Season 1.5. It's not technically a second season. Melissa Joan Hart and
husband
and Caroline Rain did the show together.
No.
And it was just twin things of, in the middle of my interview, completely unprepped, I brought up an interview she did one time where she talked shit at ABC for over-promoting Clueless the TV show and not Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And it was one of the most baller moments I've ever seen from her. And she clearly loosened up when that happened. But then watching her compete against Caroline Ray was one of the most satisfying things.
Talk about
life.
That. Okay, so what happened? What
spoilers.
Went down?
It's
oh my god,
show.
Wait, no, I guess it. Yeah, you gotta
watch
I'm
the show.
I'm so mad we can't talk about it. That's all I wanna know is how Melissa Joan Hart and Caroline Ray showed off.
Oh my god.
Showed down.
What about Ann Zelda?
Oh, Beth Broderick was not
Beth
present.
Broderick.
She wasn't available.
Oh. Okay.
Wait, they were on the same episode?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
Can I pause for a moment? Because we need to properly discuss the piece of culture that you guys have brought to me that has meant the most to me.
Right. This is the question you wanted to ask us. He's come with a demand to the studio.
Yes. Well, can we guess first? Is it
no, sure. I don't know.
Guess. I like gamifying anything.
What piece of culture have we brought?
That's one of the rules of culture, isn't it? You've got to gamify
it. Gotta gamify that culture.
What piece of culture?
Gamify that experience.
That experience. What piece of culture have we introduced to Guy that he has loved?
I'm trying to think if he's reached out about any particular
Grey's
thing.
Anatomy.
I have reached out, not to you guys.
What? Oh my god. You know what? I give up. Okay. Well, what is it?
I want to know.
On an earlier episode of this podcast, you referred to two people as being, I believe you personally and Matt Rogers referred to two people as being the finest sketch performers in New York. Do you remember at all?
Oh my god.
Sketch performers in New York?
Was it Darcy and Michael?
No. It's Bryn and Maven.
Oh my god!
McNerney Newell.
No. Oh. Yes. Okay, so yep, Bryn and Maven McNerney.
Oh my god.
The parents are Beth Newell and Peter McNerney. You can follow them on Instagram, and they have glorious performer children.
I do not give a shit about your dog. I don't care if your cat did something adorable.
No, I don't care at all.
I like myself a nice 3-year-old.
Yeah,
makes me feel very, very creepy to be looking at the children of somebody I didn't know. So I said to Beth, "Hello, I'm just letting you know your children are the greatest sketch performers in New York."
They are.
And they are so fucking funny.
They are.
They are so great. And Bryn, I was trying to figure it out today. And
he has instincts that are so innate.
He's just such a character. He's just like a suave 3-year-old. Just
yeah.
Suavely letting you know how it's going. And then and then you go to Maven, who is that agent of chaos, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, the most exciting moment in my pop culture life in 2017
was an incident
at the potty where he was doing a little bit of Maven needs a timeout, and he's very much telling his little patter to his parents, trying to manipulate things. And then Maven, who I did not know could speak, screams no at him, and it was just shit. I want there to be a reunion episode.
I know.
Where Andy Cohen interviews everyone about that moment.
Yeah. Honestly, he also had a really sassy moment recently where he said, I'm not gonna, he was just like, he kept repeating, I'm not going to be nice to my friend, or I'm going to.
Oh, no.
We have to find
Miss Emily says that hitting is okay. I'm going to hit my friend.
I'm going to hit my friend.
Oh, my God. Brynn is on record.
Oh, they were like, really? If we call your teacher, she's going to say hitting is okay? And she he goes, call her. Yeah,
no,
ask her.
Like, I'm trying to think about what the, because it's like classic comedy duo,
yeah.
And like he's a little bit Jennifer Saunders, like.
Oh my God, you're gonna
say high praise indeed. Wait, I'm trying to find it. You keep talking.
But just like he's always got patter going, and I love the like it's so vaudeville that there's one who talks and talks too much, and one who can't talk.
Yep. Oh my God. Well, you have to follow. Beth Peter Newell. McNerney at McNen, at MICNEN, and then Beth, hers is.
And the thing is, you go to Beth for the short form content. You go to Peter for the long form content.
Beth Newell, BETHNEWLL. All right, no, I have to find this
really
specific
quickly.
One.
I want to say Brynn has been documented. As saying the words, "I don't think so, honey."
No,
yeah. He did say, "I don't think so, honey."
Wait, I'm gonna pull that up.
He did. He said it.
Okay,
he said
hold on.
It.
Wait, what are you looking for specifically?
I'm looking for
the comedy sensibilities of Peter and Beth are like their capabilities are so evident from the way they just know how much of them to capture,
yes.
And when to go to the other one.
No,
yes.
They're both amazing. They really are.
It's the edit and the content in a perfect marriage. And oh God, yeah, you know what? I never realized that it was this vaudevillian thing of like one doesn't speak and then one is always, always, always speaking.
Always talking. Then Maven pours a beer on somebody.
Oh my God. Maven, Maven, I thought it's interesting that you say Maven is sort of this agent of chaos because I feel like Maven is just the passive witness to all this.
Somebody just said, you can hit your friends.
No.
I can hit my friends faster.
I don't think she said that. I think she said no hitting your friends.
Yes, she said that.
Why?
But
should we ask her on Monday? Should we ask her if she said that?
Yes.
What
are you gonna say? Somebody is gonna talk to me and my friends. I'm gonna hit my friends.
Just so you know what? The conversation ends with a declarative sentence. Not a response to anything that's been said. It's just, I'm done with this conversation. And just to refresh, the thesis of it was, I'm going to continue hitting my friends.
But I will respond to your point, Bowen.
Yes.
Because, yes, for such a long time, Maven was a patsy.
Yes.
But, as a younger child, her growing rage, I just look forward to the forms that it takes. Also, she's... Her mouth is always somewhat wet. There's probably jelly on her somewhere.
Her mouth
I love
is
it.
Always
They're
somewhat
two amazing
wet.
Kids.
Yes.
They really are. I one time there was some early videos of Brynn. I was shocked at the comedic capability. I was like, this is
how did you become aware of them?
Because I'm good friends with the parents. So
okay.
I mean, yeah.
But was it just you knew them through Anna
we
and Sudi
do,
or
no
like,
no no. We do Story Pirates.
Oh, okay.
Which is a company that takes stories that kids write in
no,
class.
No, I'm quite familiar with Story Pirates,
make,
okay?
Well, it's for
I
the
know
viewers,
actors,
okay, bitch? It's
I know
not just
actors
for you.
In Los Angeles.
You know what? It's rule number 13 of culture, bitch. It's not just for you.
It's for the viewers. Now, Peter McNerney is...
They turn them into pieces of theater. We take kids, yes. They write stories, we turn into pieces of theater. Peter McNerney is the associate artistic director of this company.
And my first contact with Brynn was when he was like 6 months old. He's on his high chair. And this was the first comedic moment that I think is on record. Is Peter does like a little thing with his mouth, and then Brynn copies him and does a like 6 months old, and then Peter laughs and Brynn laughs, and just I mean maybe there's no comedic thing there, but the fact that he's able to repeat something back to his father, oh my God, get out!
It's amazing.
It's like it is wonderful what makes children like. The things that hit them as laughter, and I wonder how much of them are copied or how much of them are just sort of like two things that shouldn't go together are now happening.
Yes,
like,
yes, yes. Which is comedy.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, let's have this conversation. Kids, yes or no?
I would say for me, no, because I feel like I would know now at 27 that I would want them at some point.
Yeah.
Because you're at the height of your fertility.
Exactly. I'm in my sexual prime. By the way, the male sexual prime is 18 to 25, so that means we're all officially
out
of it.
Dang. Oh, well.
Yes. I was implying you were a woman. I wasn't trying in any way to comment on your male sexuality.
No, I would be just entering my sexual prime, which is, of course, from 28 to 35.
But the thing is, like, it is nice that as a man you can have them whenever, but also you shouldn't have them whenever.
No, I always kind of comfort myself. My dad had me when he was 35, and so that's always like, well, I have time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
my parents were 18 and 19 when my sister was born. Hmm. And there is that, like, there's such weirdness around the fact that, like, they were never adults without children. Like, it's really strange
crazy.
That those people can have children.
My grandmother was 17, 1955.
Yeah, that was just how things worked.
Yeah.
It was like, that's what women are for.
17.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
I can't imagine either.
Paul Roy Moore, he can.
Oh God.
The Las Culturistas public
yes.
need a sense of healing after
Culture.
The trash talking that came around Culture Wars. Because God knows I loved Culture Wars and I loved playing the game of hostility, but there were times.
Yeah, you were Team Bowen and it was really hurtful.
No, I specifically took opposite sides on two different questions in ways that tore me up. Yes, I took Ray Sani over Allison. That was Allison, right?
It was Amanda Duarte.
And then she got too sick to compete, and Mitra Juhari, sweet Mitra, took her place.
Yes, but. But
probably because you said that.
Yes.
But then you picked Sam over Dave.
But then I took Sam over Dave.
Why would you ever do that?
Tore me apart. Because Sam Tagger is just a well of chaos. I love that the Brooklyn faggot comedy scene is rich enough that we can have like absurdist of his skill level, but I love that he's still a gay comic enough that he can, I don't think so, honey, with the best of them.
There you go.
But still not as well as Dave.
Sam has his foot a bunch of legs and feet, and a bunch of different little territories and sensibilities and what have you, and he succeeds in all
right,
of them.
Well, I would like to, I guess, come out and say that if anything that I said to
you're
you,
exuding
Bowen,
all of this tension, by
really
the way.
Okay. Hurt you, uh-huh. If I ever hurt you in the trash talking of Culture War 2017, I apologize, because now I know I didn't need to say anything because I was going to fucking win the whole time.
Can
you
I just
stupid,
say,
dumb can, bitch.
Can I just say it was lovely to watch the process just to see, like, you've got all of your Long Island rage from all of those boys who were mean to you that is just, like, dying to come out in any moment. I love that process-oriented peacemaker Bowen Yang was always trying to explain why things, like, when you went into, well, the picks I made were me trying to avoid conflict. I was like, bitch, believe in your own posse.
Yeah. No, that's
I was offended on behalf
he,
of...
He started making excuses day before. He
Stop
was like,
it.
Oh, you know...
But
like,
it's
I,
why,
I'm,
it's
I'm
why
an
at the end of the day,
and...
It's why at the end of the day I was Team Bowen.
There,
because
wow.
It was like... Conflict avoidance and rules.
Yeah, because you know what? Like, I don't like it. I don't like this whole culture, which is we don't want to root for people that want to win.
That's not what's
happening. I wanted
to
win, and guess what? I won again! I won again! I won Battle of the Divas, I won Culture War. I am so much better than you, and it is so amazing for me.
Matt, could you do me a favor? Shh.
Don't you shush me, because now I'm mad.
The worst part of all of this
am better.
It's yet another competition with which Matt will relitigate
for
years and years.
I do
to
have
come.
To say, I do very much appreciate, like,
now I'm mad.
I have been in this business long enough that I fear for people I truly love and respect who do not believe in themselves to want to win at any cost. And so I do very much.
I do want to say one thing.
Respect.
Dropping a lot of this.
Yes.
Okay.
I want to say one thing.
Yes.
Literally, I had people asking me, like, I was like, who are you rooting for? Like, as like a joke. And they were like, well, I'm rooting for Bowen because I think that if you'll take the loss a little bit better than Bowen. I was like, if you knew how little we actually cared, like, we don't care who wins. We want to have a good fucking show, bitch.
Also,
we don't care who wins.
I truly give no shits
we
that I lost.
We don't care. But people were like, I guess they were believing the shit talk enough where they were, and this is... maybe we shouldn't be revealing this because we will should talk again. Like, we want you to believe it and be in there with it. But girl, we were okay. Like, there was no hurt feelings. And then that's when I realized, oh no, I can't say the same things for the competitors. And I hope that none of the competitors feel bad that they might have lost, aka lost a round, because they all were amazing.
No, like when you guys were doing the breakdance, I enjoyed that episode so much. Like, the backstory was so rich and beautiful. Mm. But I was just like I have to say one thing about part one of Culture Wars.
Okay.
Is like, after you guys did the breakdowns of everyone, I went back and I re-listened to
the storm.
Yeah, these young girls.
These young girls.
Which is, in my opinion, possibly the greatest I Don't Think So, Honey that has ever been produced, not by the two of you. And then just seeing Pat go down so hard. So hard in that first round was really rough.
And then to know what happened, which is that
he hasn't listened to the second episode.
You
haven't posted it yet. How would I know?
Well, at
time of this release, it hasn't posted, and it is well known who wins Coach War.
All right. Well, we basically just spoiled it.
Don't you want to allow me to be a fan?
Yes.
Also, if you guys need to build a fantasy team website so hard before you do Culture Wars again, because
maybe we'll go out to LA and do Culture Wars where I don't give a fuck if they get offended or not, because I don't fucking know them.
Like, Louis Rattel and I were talking about how much we need you guys to come and do Culture Wars.
We want to come out there and do it. We really do.
Yeah. But I think we need to. What do you think about this? We need to start with the regular 50%.
Yes. I think we just need to go out there and do it. I Don't Think So, Honey.
And then pick our draft.
Can I say something like from the bottom of my heart to both of you?
Yes.
Yeah.
When I go to the Virgil or UCB Sunset or wherever this actually takes place,
right?
And I see just how packed the place is, and then every faggot of note who was not booked for the show is in the audience. I will be jealous. I will be actively like, they're so young and pretty that no one ever knew.
Oh my God.
Don't you ever.
You have a fucking TV show.
I know.
We submitted packets and were roundly rejected.
We submitted packets and didn't get
Don't you
on
tell
the
us
show.
About jealousy.
You told us. He gave us hope.
Because there was a packet that referenced Las Culturistas. And I assumed it was one of the two of you.
No!
And I was like, oh, this great packet is wonderful.
Wait, what?
Someone
wrote a packet to your show and referenced Las Culturistas?
Yes, it was because fucking star Rashida Crockett, who did end up getting hired for my show.
Rashida?
Oh, fuck her.
Is a fucking research monster who, like, for every person had done, like, deep, deep research.
Oh, my God.
And
do you remember the reference?
Oh, it was that Rachel Bloom had said on this show that she loved peanut butter on toast for breakfast. So it was a pitch for a game that was in some way about peanut butter on toast.
The fact that we helped this person get a job in
TV. And lay here penniless in New York City.
I will say that your shout outs on Pop Rocket gave us like the lasting boost that we like have been coasting on this whole time.
Oh, no, I was totally at the gym, and a guy came up to me and said,
I know his name is Nico. He's our friend.
Yes, and he was like, are you Guy? And I was like, yes. And he was like, I'm a huge fan of Las Culturistas. And I was like, oh, and then he explained how he learned about it from my podcast, of which he did not mention being a fan. And talked about how great you guys were at me.
His media diet is all podcasts. He listens to everyone. I'm sure he listens to Pop Rocket religiously.
I have to say something. I, like, after the election, I had a hard not able to listen to podcasts in any way.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
And my recent, car trip to Sacramento and Las Culturistas was my return to being able to listen to podcasts.
Oh, my God. We were Christina Yang, Sandra Oh's character, catching a big fish after not being able to operate.
Oh my God, I gave up before that happened. Yes, I do remember when she had like post-traumatic stress and couldn't operate.
Yes.
And then she caught a fish and all of a sudden was better.
Right. I wanted to say, Guy, your shout-outs on Pop Rocket were, I think, they were a moment for me because I had never heard someone so aptly describe me and Matt in such a simple way. You described me as, you described Matt, of course, in his like, you know, he's a product of Long Island masculinity, and here he is now, and he's the biggest of all faggots now, which is glorious. Like, what a great 180. What a great heel turn. But
musical
for me,
theater faggots,
yes,
you said.
Yes.
I believe.
And then for me, you described me as part someone but part Crystal Carrington, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I fucking died. Because you are a fucking Joan. You're the Joan Collins to my Crystal. You're the Alexis to my Crystal. Oh, and Guy, that was very nice of you to mention us.
I'm a big fan of the show. Glad to finally be here. Pissed off I was not able to be here for either Culture Wars or I Don't Think So Honey Live.
It makes me angry, but also it will drive us to come out there. When will be a good time for us to come out there to Los Angeles?
You tell us.
Anytime. If you showed up, like the danger, but also the magic of showing up splashily in February while everyone's there for pilot season.
Oh.
Oh,
that would be a little fierce.
That would be
wonderful. Wait, but where should we do it though? Because I want to do it at a good place.
I mean, the thing is I do imagine this in my head.
where?
It's always been at the Virgil in my head, uh-huh. But I don't think that's big enough.
Well, LA. Las Culturistas fans, you let us know in your 5-star review on iTunes you want us to come.
I have never been able to get the LA Gay and Lesbian Center to toss their theater, which is magnificent,
yeah,
and anything, but I haven't tried in a really long time.
How many does it hold?
Oh, that's a fucking theater. Well, like, it's,
then I get nervous about.
See, no, yeah, then that makes me panic a little
You'll
bit.
You'll be fine.
I don't know.
Although
Culture War was fun because it was a fucking warehouse. Villain, it was crazy. Bowen and I walked in and we were like, no, this is insane.
It was wild.
It looked like the kind of place where they go in SVU and they're like, well, we found some part of her over here and some part of her over here.
Or it's like a warehouse in a heist movie.
Yeah. Shows of places like that are always the most fun. The thing I love most about...
Were you there? Well, fucking Will.
I couldn't be there, I'm sorry.
Why weren't you there? What else did you have going on?
God, what was I doing?
Okay, well, then obviously it wasn't very good.
Okay,
Were you doing traps? Were you doing traps?
No, I wasn't doing any traps.
What do you do instead of traps? What kind of things are you into?
What kind of music making am I into, or what?
I thought you were saying traps in the physical exercise.
I was. Okay. Trapezius muscle.
Yeah. Oh, no. As far as the physical exercise bit, it's mostly stage handing and downhill skateboarding are the things.
Okay,
and look. It's doing you plenty of favors.
Can I tell you my opinion on skateboarders?
Yes.
Yeah.
Let the straight girls have them. Like, it is
no,
very.
No, I love
it,
a skateboard.
I don't like them at all.
And there are gay guys for whom that is true. Oh, it's so real and masculine and all of that. Let the straight girls have them. Let him speak for himself.
I'll just say that there is one gay downhill skateboarder out there who is a fantastic photographer and an amazing dude named Matthew Doubler.
Okay,
and you should check him out. He's all over Instagram, all over the place. The guy is a fucking shredder. You should check him out.
Listen,
honestly, do you think the gays will look up Matthew something Dublin?
Matthew Dublin.
It's Maxwell Doubler. Okay. Maxwell Story Doubler.
Can I say something Maxwell truly horrible?
What? Yes.
When Tim Murray did his I Don't Think So Honey about his bully from
High
Ohio.
School.
Which you couldn't see this, but he was doing costume reveal on costume reveal on costume reveal.
Really?
Yeah, you couldn't see it. But
I did go on Facebook and find his bully
to
figure out whether he was actually bald hot or not.
And what's the verdict?
Not really. I did that. I don't think I will look at this skateboarder.
There you go.
Look, I think there's a sensitivity to them, really. But that's
to the skateboarders.
Me. To the skateboarders. They're
Do you
not...
think skateboarding is an art or something?
I don't have any opinion either way. I remember many days, halcyon days of watching these boys play Tony Hawk and just secretly pining for them. So, you know, that's my thing.
All right. Well, with that information, I think that it actually is time to move on to I Don't Think So, Honey.
Okay.
Now, are you ready? Do you have one?
I've composed three options.
Oh,
I would like
yes.
the two of you to look at them now and determine which one you would like me to speak on.
Oh, you want us to look at the topics themselves.
Yes.
You know what? I don't want to. I think
No,
we'll
look at the topics. Look
right,
at the topics.
Fine, fine, fine.
Can we read these aloud or no?
Yes,
oh,
go for it.
Okay.
Well, okay. Okay, sorry, we're just reading these to the people.
I think I would be most interested to hear this.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's huge.
I think I'd be most interested to hear that.
This will change minds.
But first,
read to people what they are.
Okay, no, okay, so the first one that we did not choose is The Children Have Forgotten. See, if this were The Children Have Forgotten, that segment, we could do this. The Children Have Forgotten the Gun in Betty Lou's Handbag.
You have no idea what that is.
No, I don't know what that is.
I mean, it's the greatest Alfre Woodard vehicle of all time.
Okay, Alfre.
I love Alfre Woodard, right. But I don't know that.
Yeah, no, you don't, because it's not available on streaming. It's out of print on DVD. It is a gentle early 90s comedy where we said Penelope Ann Miller can totally be the front person for a movie, and we were wrong, but it is the most watchable film you will ever see, and part of me is like, somebody needs to get the IP to this and turn it into a musical, because it would be so fun.
Well, then how
Betty,
you expect us to watch
Betty
Lou's
it. Handbag. Okay. Well, we'll buy our tickets.
And
all right,
then
so
this other
next
one is people who watch Will and Grace, but not Great News.
Are you into Great News?
I am a deep supporter of Great News. Great News is very, very funny. We're losing our Andrea Martin on Difficult People. We
I
need
know.
To conserve our Andrea Martin. It's super, super funny. Like, it is goofy, and I deeply believe in funny sitcoms.
Yes.
And I think that we have raised this zombie, this revenant of Will and Grace. And it is good, and people are watching it, mm-hmm. and they're not investing in the funny comedies of today.
Sure.
Like, we're just going to end up in a world of Hulu's Casual and Netflix's Love, and we will get what we deserve.
Okay, yes, that's fair. And you know what? It has a friend of the pod, Naomi McPerrigan, writes for it, and then Tina Fey plays the female Jack Donaghy. We mean, what else do you need? And Andrea Martin. Let's watch it.
It sounds
I'll,
amazing.
I'll get into it.
I didn't know that Naomi wrote for it.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's what she's doing out there.
Okay. So then
she's done two voices for it thus far.
Oh,
really?
Okay.
It's exciting.
Little VO actress.
You take this, and you're gonna go last.
Okay, and the reveal will be in the actual. Okay. I don't think so, honey.
Now, are you gonna go first, or am I gonna go first?
You should go, because I truly don't know.
It's shocking that you never prepare.
Okay. Well. All
right. Well, I'm just saying. I don't think so, honey, Bowen, that he never prepares. Because I don't think so, honey.
This,
never once.
Is this the official
and
one?
And maybe no, it's not. But I'm also saying maybe it's why he consistently loses.
Okay. We don't
tournaments.
Have to. All right, okay, all right.
It hurts me when you do that.
Well, I don't care that it does.
Okay.
Come to play.
Indignant. Okay, here we go. This is
now
Matt.
I have a vicious I don't think so, honey.
This is Matt Rogers' I don't think so, honey. His time starts now.
I don't think so, honey, that Billy Eichner is too famous for us now. Bitch, I'm sorry, but I don't want to go to my Instagram and you're hanging out with Colton Haynes, who also is not for us, despite being one of us. Billy.
Wow.
I'm sorry, but is Difficult People being canceled because you were too famous for it?
Oh!
You all of a sudden are wearing really nice suits, being all sexy and handsome. It came out of nowhere, but I support it. All of a sudden, you are fucking Colton Haynes on American Horror Story, bitch. That is very famous. That is very fancy. All of a sudden, Billy Eichner is one of the fancy boys. We used to say we should ask Billy Eichner to be on I Don't Think So, Honey Live. And then I recently had to tell Bowen, no, the bitch is too fancy. He is too
seconds.
Fancy. He hangs out with Colton Haynes.
Oh my God.
All of a sudden, he has this high hair. He's giving you this like hot, like 1950s retro sort of thing. Sleeves rolled up. Literally, Billy, come back to us. I don't think so, honey, till then.
And that's 1 minute. You know what? Yeah, you're right. I think
he is untouchable now.
Well, he's become the person that he's made fun of. He's the abyss has stared back.
He has.
You know? But we love him still.
He's wonderful. He did talk show the game show and was super, super sweet and super, super great. But I just want to say,
what a get nowadays.
I look forward to playing this to a truly insufferable 33-year-old Matt Rogers. Like I look forward to like again the arms that your personal trainer has gotten for you, and the tense condescension that he'll give me.
Oh,
understanding that I might go for the gut about I knew you when girl, and like he's praying it doesn't happen, but he's still skating on top of condescension.
Oh my God, he's gonna toss me right aside.
There is no way, bitch. Honestly, also no, this is not gonna happen. I'll tell you why it's not gonna happen, because they're gonna go back to I Don't Think So, Honey, and they're gonna find me talking shit about all these celebrities. They're gonna find that I talk shit about Ellen in episode 3 with Sudi, and they're gonna be like, well, we can't book him on Ellen. never get famous.
And I quote, and let me just re-quote this again for the children.
God.
Ellen has lost all her edge.
She has lost her edge, I think.
Yes, it's pathetic. Who, like, is she a comedian anymore?
She knows. I say she's not.
She's a haircut.
She knows.
No,
oh,
Ellen
God.
Is so frustrating.
She's an emoji. All right, here we go. I'm ready. You know what? I'm semi-prepared for this.
Okay,
this,
bitch. Okay? I'm happy to hear that.
All right, here we
this
go.
This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, turtlenecks? My neck is too short for you. And listen, I have friends who pull them off so well. Dave Mazzoni, professional choreographer.
So
Dave Mazzoni has the swan-like neck for it. My friend Matt over here has the neck for it. Mm. I don't have the neck for it. And you want to know what? You want to know why? I've proven this out today because I thought I was going to be bold and wear a new Uniqlo turtleneck that I bought this weekend, and I wore it to work, and no matter how I cuffed it, looked terrible. I looked like a fucking,
oh my god,
I don't know, what even like a little Pokemon. I looked like a little Diglett. I looked like a little Diglett, and I can't pull off turtlenecks. And if I can't have turtlenecks, then no one can. I don't think so. Any turtlenecks? Why should we cover up our necks? No one's giving hickeys anymore. There's no practical utilitarian purpose for them anymore, and I don't think we should have them in fashion. Outlaw turtlenecks. Illegalized turtlenecks, I say. I don't think so, honey. Fucking turtlenecks. You know what? Armie Hammer wore one in a shoot, and he looked crazy in it. Turtlenecks. I don't think so, honey. Oh my god.
I do. I feel like I can visually, really viscerally.
Me in a turtleneck?
No, see Armie Hammer in one as of very recently.
Well, because, yeah, he's doing all these interviews for Call Me By Your Name. Yeah, and he looks amazing.
And that is the style now. These turtlenecks with the leather jacket over it and patterned pants. Nico, he said he's coming to I Don't Think So, Honey, and he was concerned about being cold. And he said, but don't worry, I brought a bunch of turtlenecks.
He'll settle down with some nice lawyer and you'll always be
No,
like,
you can't no, have no, two no. lawyers.
You can't have two.
Oh, is he?
He's a
God,
lawyer.
Like, you guys, the best people to be fans of your work are gay lawyers. Because it's like, they got the money to show up.
Uh-huh.
And like, the education to get the jokes. And it is like... Okay.
There you go.
So there's this guy who listens to Pop Rocket whose name is Dimitri Portnoy, and he was like, well, if somebody else is going to post it, I guess I will. And he fucking wrote the brief that like all of the biggest First Amendment scholars in America like got him and some other lawyers to write a brief that was their opinion about the First Amendment for the Colorado bakery case. And it was just like... Mm-hmm. Fuck you. Like, you're writing Kathleen Sullivan's brief for her.
Right.
Like, you're a goddamn superstar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why do you come to my show?
Better that than the reverse.
Exactly.
Which is these, like, gays who are the smartest people in the world who write for fucking Vulture and Slate and should be saving us from North Korea.
Yes.
But instead, they're writing about how... You know, Mercedes Ruel, did she really deserve the Oscar in 92?
Guys, I saw Torch Song Trilogy last night.
Oh my god. Did you love it?
It's great.
It was so good, yeah. And I have to say, a not great facelift has never fit more perfectly on a character.
That's the second rave we've had for that show
it's
on this
so
program.
It's so good. I just couldn't adore Michael Urie more.
Yeah, oh. And that's the second rave. Drew Drogi we had on last episode, yeah. And he raved up and down about Michael Urie. I want to get Michael Urie on this show.
That would be a great get. I think Michael Urie's
I want to ask him about
us.
Ugly Betty. I want to ask him about Becky Newton.
I want to ask him about Cocktails and Classics, which Drew was also on.
Yeah.
I have to say, I adore Becky Newton. I know that she's probably somewhere, like on a procedural or something.
Yeah, where
but
is
I
she,
know.
Though?
Also, I need you guys to understand that I was recurring on a multi cam that Michael Urie was on that was essentially died the week that I shot my first episode.
No, I hate that.
It was so
you
great.
Can't connect the dots that way.
Can I tell you what we just auditioned for?
What?
Ballers on HBO.
Can you fucking imagine?
Oh,
we're going
God.
In for the same stuff this week. All the same stuff.
So sad.
And it's Ballers on HBO. We're auditioning for the well-groomed assistant
who has a twitch in his eye. Oh. Anyway.
How did you do the twitch? Show me.
No. Well, you do. You go first. No. It wasn't even that. No, it wasn't even that bad. It was like that.
You guys, this is
hard.
Really well suited to podcasting. I believe,
podcasts are a visual medium.
I love it when you say
it's
that.
Rule of culture number 50.
Podcasts are a visual medium.
They are.
And literally, you have to give people something to wonder about. Okay, this is Guy Branum's I Don't Think So, Honey.
And
one of
this
three
is the,
options.
The selected topic.
Oh, and he has his
beats
written out.
He's ready to go.
This is legend. First of all, we should just stop
he
and
just
say.
He just gave his own book the stank face. He was like, ready to go, bitch.
Let's just say this is a huge moment. A lot of the listeners will be gagged just that this episode is even existing.
Literally,
so.
Honestly, this is, well, we'll talk about it
a
after.
Dream come
go,
true.
Go,
okay,
go,
this
go.
Is Guy Branum's I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
people who don't respect Pitbull? I don't think so, honey. Oh, you love your cute little jokes. Oh, he dresses like a short grandpa. Oh, yes, I'll accept it. He is probably a Republican, but he is a pop machine. Yes. He makes jams. Yep. He has given us as much good as, like, he is worth 5 Spice Girls. Like, everything. Timber, fucking Fireball. Fucking, if you cannot respect a song called Sexy Beaches Hotels, you deserve to lose the ability to orgasm because you should not have the capacity to nurture joy. Your hate is rooted in his failure to provide you with the symbols of culture that you understand. If he were giving you standard, like, black hip-hop guy, you would have his face tattooed on your thigh. But because he dresses like a small business owner from Palm Beach, you're like, no, I cannot deal with it. Fucking Priyanka Chopra was making her jump over to America. Who took care of her? It was Miss World and Mr.
God.
World. Why?
Oh my
you
God.
Think you are better than Pitbull, but I do not think so, honey.
Ah! That's 1 minute.
Wow, Hot Engineer Will just lived his life. You love Pitbull?
That one fucking made my day. That was awesome.
God.
That's the best one I've heard yet.
That's one for the bucks.
Wow, that was great. God. You know what? Tonight, I'm going to go home, and before I shut my eyes, I'm going to say,
Dale.
And you know what? Time of my life.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, look.
Can I just say, those Priyanka Chopra songs are not good, but are wonderful.
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Exotic. I'm talking about In My City.
Are they about Priyanka?
Yeah, like, they are all sort of, like, thematically, like, In My City, he's talking about Miami, and she is talking about Mumbai.
She sings on it?
Singing?
Yes, and the thing is, she doesn't sing in her own movies. Also, I just need to say this to you and to everyone listening.
Okay. Yes.
Culturally.
Yes.
Bollywood, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry, is possibly the best romantic comedy I have ever seen.
Okay.
I will buy it for both of you on iTunes. It is 3 hours long, 5 musical numbers.
As all Bollywood movies
it's
are.
It's almost entirely in English, and it is the most fun rom-com, like, gay rom-com with, like, one legit hot guy.
It's literally just called, I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
No,
but
it's called Dostana. It means friendship. But it's, they have to pretend to be gay to get an apartment.
That's fun.
And a very layered hair Priyanka Chopra is the girl who couldn't live with 2 straight guys.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. You know what? Bollywood has been a blind spot in culture for me. And I need to, you know what? Yeah, I need to get into Bollywood, I think. And I think Matt is going to be my partner in this. Because yeah. I'm such a late arrival on K-pop. But I love it
now. Brandon Scott Jones just did a movie with Priyanka,
yes.
As you were in it as well.
Yes.
Oh, whoa, you were in a movie with Priyanka Chopra?
Well, I mean, we didn't share a scene, but I was at the table read with her. She was gorgeous.
He said, prettier in person.
Yes, yes, yes.
No.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that shocking?
Yeah.
Okay, so what did BSJ tell you?
Brandon Scott Jones said that he did have some scenes with Priyanka.
Yes, yes.
And, like, she was pulling up a video of, like, her dancing or something. And he was like, oh, I didn't know you could dance.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
She was like, yeah, I'm a huge fucking Bollywood star.
Wait, she said it like that.
Something like that. Something like that.
The fact that they demand choreography out of all their fucking stars,
yes,
is the best.
We need to get Dave Mazzoni over there.
It's old Hollywood.
He's a professional.
Yeah. Okay, Guy, speaking of it, because I love when, because, okay, we haven't listened to you on Pop Rocket for a while. What are your jams?
Tell us some jams. What are you hitting the
like
streets hard for?
I mean, these days I am very much all about Lady Bird. It gave me life.
Okay.
And jams wise, it's just a lot of Pitbull, you guys. Like, it really is. It's Celebrate. It's Sexy Beaches Hotels. It is Fireball.
Let me.
Is Timber.
How about this? We're gonna name some things, and you tell us if they're your jam.
Okay. You go as an example.
Pink.
Oh, it is my jam in all of its form, both as color and human being.
Okay. Demi Lovato, new Demi Lovato.
Yes, okay. Definitely my jam.
Great.
Louis Fertel, a new host of Pop Rocket.
I mean, I hate that it's like every time I like see on Twitter that people are like quoting something glorious that he put together, I'm like, oh, God, are they even going to let me back? So, yes, it is my jam.
Okay. And I'll ask this because I'm surprised Matt hasn't. New Kelly.
I haven't listened.
Okay.
Well, that's all we had time today for Guy.
Oh, no. When I associated you with Kelly Clarkson before, like one time incidentally in conversation, I implied you might like her, and you prickled so hard with Yes, you did. That you were very, that's not the entirety of my identity.
Well, it's not, but I do love. And also, I feel literally the entire episode of Wrap Up Show that I was on over at Stern was because Kelly Clarkson was on that day.
Oh, wow.
And I did I was the Kelly Clarkson expert.
Yes.
That was why I was booked.
Yeah.
Like, but I also will say I'm almost a little upset that we did all that shit. We talked about Taylor so much, and I have not had a chance to sit here and tell the listeners of Las Culturistas that I am personally offended and disappointed if you all haven't streamed Meaning of Life or bought Kelly Clarkson's album Meaning of Life on iTunes or streamed it on Spotify, because it is so fucking good. There are some tracks on it which are so amazing. She sounds so much better than she ever has, which is crazy to even say.
Yes.
But it's the first time she sounded alive and awake in her music and not bored, and I'm so happy. The new album is so good.
It's
and also good. It's been such a good time, good season for female pop releases.
Yes, yes.
Because Taylor is very good. The Demi Lovato album is really good.
Excellent.
I haven't really gotten through the Pink album, but I know that what I've heard is good. And the Kelly album is, oh my god, it's so amazing. I'll tell you, the only one that I can't really get into is Miley.
Oh sure.
Younger now. I can't get into that album.
Listen to a couple tracks. But yeah.
But it's a good time for the ladies.
Sure. There you go. Well, anyway, but this is what I was getting at earlier before Guy started is I don't think so, honey.
Yeah.
This is such a pleasure. We love you so much. Thank you for doing this. Truly.
Thank you so much for making the show. Thank you for making me aware of so many delightful people who I would have not known before.
Honestly, it's a love fest here at Las Culturistas, and that feels really good after all the bloodletting that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
We love Guy Branum. We love you listening. We love, you know, Hot Engineer Will.
Yes.
And we're so happy he has his own mic. Say goodbye.
Oh, thanks, guys. Goodbye, everyone.
Well, goodbye, Bowen. Goodbye,
Matt. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, we must close off.
I guess
we
should sing our song called Goodbye.
Goodbye, goodbye, oh, goodbye, goodbye, my friend, goodbye.
Hey, goodbye!
Womp. Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.